This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Phil Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
All right, it's 10 a.m. It's time for this week's edition of Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears, along with Len Zien today. The Zien machine is out traveling around, and we're going to have to find out exactly where Len is because he's all over the place. We have Ed Stevenson. He's out today. He's running in a 10K, and I don't even think it's on a golf course, so we'll hope that Ed doesn't wipe out like he did a couple of years ago and end up needing shoulder surgery again, which put a damper in his golf game for a while. And then we have Bill Berger, who is loaded up with a house full of out-of-town company this week. So it's down to being a twosome. Len Zien, jump in here. Where are you at? I know you're roving around somewhere.
Yeah, well, actually, right now we're in Illinois. We're in transit from we did our time in Wisconsin, and we really had quite a worthwhile week, a very interesting week. We went from Illinois, actually, because we were at the John Deere Classic, and then worked our way to Eagle Ridge, and then into Wisconsin for kind of a. It really had nothing to do with golf, but we had a stop there at a tourist attraction we've wanted to go to for years. The House on the Rock and the Taliesin and the Frank Lloyd Wright stuff. It was just something we were interested in, and then now we are bound for Michigan, and we'll spend about a week there. Then who knows? Well, who knows? I really don't want to go back to Florida in the heat over there for a while, but we understand that the Michigan wildfires are coming this way tonight, so I may have another thought about that. But anyway, it's good to be back on the radio show. We did some work there from the John Deere Classic, which was fun, and the tournament ended a little, you know, after the show, but it was really a great tournament, all in great weather, and it's really been an interesting week. There's a lot I could talk about with this week, so we'll move on from there.
Well, you know, Len, they talk about the fact, it's even the title of the 50-year book by our guest last week, Craig DeVries, that magic happens here, and boy, we came pretty close to seeing some real magic last week on Sunday at the John Deere Classic. Sepp Straka cruising and appeared for sure that he was going to break through that 60 barrier he was sitting on and get down into the 50s, and then he decided to, I'm not sure if he decided to go for 59 or 58 there on 18, but put one in the drink, and it appeared that there was enough time for several players to catch him, but then again, nobody did.
Yeah, nobody did. It was there for you know, Brendan Todd. He was, of course, the best chance. Alex Milley. Anyway, a young player, Alex from North Carolina. He was right there in the next to the last group too. They both had chances. And a couple of others, if they, you know, really would have got hot at the end, could have, you know, gone for a playoff or something. But Straka, he's just sitting in the clubhouse watching it all unfold, and one player after another couldn't get the job done. So even with that very disappointing finish on the last hole, and that was very captivating to watch him because he came from way back. You know, there is a side issue that we should probably just mention here on the about the John Deere Classic. Those concerts, they had very high, the concerts after a golf tournament are not all that unusual, but what they did at John Deere was they had two very high profile guys, Darius Rucker on Saturday and Blake Shelton on Sunday, and their concerts came immediately after the round, very close to the time the last putt dropped. They were very popular there in the Quad Cities. And they did these concerts right off the 18th fairway. The spectators were not on the fairway itself, but they were all over it, and they had great crowds. Very great. It really swelled their gallery. And I talked with new tournament director Andrew Lehman a couple days after he had a chance to kind of gather his wits again. Pretty darn sure that those will return because they were extremely popular, and I'm sure that more and more tournaments will do things like that now after seeing the success that the John Deere Classic had with it.
Well, Len, you know, you go back as far as I do to that tournament, even before John Deere was there, and there was other sponsors, including Hardee's and people like that. But I remember the days when music was a bigger part of championship week there. There was events on the golf course. Saturday night, there was fireworks. You went out on one of the fairways, and you watched the fireworks, and it wasn't uncommon to turn around and see one of the players in the field, maybe standing next to you with his wife or girlfriend or their kids, and out there mingling in the crowd, you know, watching the celebration. And it was always a good time. And if you didn't, you know, stay at the championship site, you could go downtown and Rock Island Brewing Company area. They would close off the street down there, and there'd be bands out there, and people sort of migrated as a group to the downtown area, and there was big out on the street parties. I also remember there was an area the first couple of years at Deer Run down by the Stonehouse, the management office off the second green, and there was a place down there with a live band, and sometimes the live band you know, and included Jake and the Flounders or whatever, which was some of the players, yeah, Peter Jacobson and those guys. And they would put on a show, and people would stick around after golf and just have a good time for themselves. But at some point, that message got lost. My understanding from people closer to the situation said that John Deere wanted to make it more of a golf tournament, people there for golf, and maybe take away some of the people who were just there to party all day and get out of hand at night. So, but it seems like the entertainment theme is back a little bit, and I think a lot of people miss that.
Oh, absolutely. You know what, really, I think when you're a mid-major tournament like the John Deere has been for so long, you've got to have your community involvement, and John Deere has had that. I mean, they've done a great job with it, and you know, one way around the thing about the people getting out of control, there weren't crowd problems here, and they did this kind of smart. I think you had a ticket price for the Saturday and Sunday rounds. But you had to go to the golf tournament. You had to be at the golf tournament first. You couldn't walk. They didn't allow anybody to buy a ticket or just use the ticket to come in and see the concert. And they shut the gates at 4 o'clock. So the concert goers were in fact golf fans. And hopefully that was the strategy there, was they would attract more of the non-golfer, non-golf enthusiasts to the tournament, and it was a successful venture. It was my hat's off to them. It was a real good idea. When I heard it was going to be around the as close to the 18th fairway as it was, I know that Andrew told me that the PGA Tour had its concerns about that lose the integrity of the golf course by getting beat up by crowds and stuff like that. That was that fear out there that it could be a problem, but it wasn't at all. And the weather held up really good. That was a big help too, of course. But they brought all these porta potties right in front of the clubhouse right as soon as the play ended, and then took them down, and they weren't there gone when the next round started. It was quite an operation, but it was really interesting to watch it.
Well, it sure was. And then, of course, it was capped off by Sepp Straka, Mr. Squares Golf Shoes, who shot quite a round there on Sunday. And Lenny, I think when you and I saw him and I talked to him on Friday after round two, we were the first people out there doing the interview with him on Friday. Who knew that he was going to take home the trophy and the winner's check on Sunday? So anyway, congratulations to him for some outstanding golf. Lenny, it is, you know, we talked John Deere, but we have more tournaments. It's kind of tournament season up here, and tournaments on top of tournaments and on top of tournaments. And we have a couple of great ones happening in Illinois this week, and one of them is going to take place at the White Eagle Golf Club in Naperville. It is the 123rd Women's Western National Amateur Championship, and we're pleased to welcome back to the program the president of the association, Susan Buchanan. Susan, how are you this morning? You're glad to be back in Illinois for another tournament.
I certainly am, and this is going to be our best one yet.
Well, Susan,
it's our 123rd, as you said, and we without interruption. So we survived two world wars, we survived COVID, and we've been doing this for 123 straight years.
Well, Susan, what does that say about just the championship and the people that put it on, that when certain tournaments were stopped for World War One, World War Two, COVID, 9/11, around 9/11, different things, that somehow the WWGA and its National Amateur Championship has survived all these years with the consecutive string of being played that it has?
It really is amazing. And I was the tournament chair during the COVID year, and I had to pull a lot of strings to allow the tournament to happen. But we really have had no interruption for 123 years.
Well, Susan, I know that the field of this championship has always been a good one. This year it seems to be perhaps even stronger. It seems like you have a lot of states represented. You have other countries represented. Give us the roundup on the field, and what about some of last year's finalists and recent winners? Are they coming back to play?
Absolutely. We have a field of 120 from 29 states and 15 countries, from China to Australia. We've got the second-ranked amateur from Australia, Justice Bozio, in our field. We're excited to have her. And Taglo Jeravavavitaporn of Thailand, and she played at Iowa State, is going to try to be the first player to win back-to-back women's Western amateurs in more than two decades, when Meredith Duncan did it in 2000 and 2001.
Well, Susan, also with us, another member of our favorite foursome here, Len Zeem, is with us, who's covered the event for years. Lenny, what have you got for Susan Buchanan as we talk about the 123rd Women's Western Amateur Golf Championship this week at White Eagle?
Well, you know, one thing that really did intrigue me, when I knew that Susan was coming on, I did a little research of the website, and they had a great display of who the field was and all, but that has got to be, Susan, that I didn't know what you had said previously because we had a little break up there, but this has got to be the strongest field that, I mean, I was reading over bios of different players that were coming in, the strongest field you've had in for years, if not ever. It really looks extremely strong. I was wondering why that would particularly be the case in 2023. It's always been a good tournament, but boy, this field looks loaded.
Well, we are improving our fields every year. Our partnership with the Western Golf Association has really helped strengthen our fields. We've got players that are in the top WAGGR rankings. It's really getting exciting because the gap between the top player and the people on the waiting list is getting slimmer and slimmer. Women's golf in general is just getting so strong. And we have quite a few local Illinois players. We have Lisa Copeland, who is 15 years old. Last year, she was our 2022 runner-up in the Western Junior. She was going into her freshman year in high school and lost to Jessica Mason from Colorado, who was heading for her freshman year at Pomona College. We also have Sarah Arnold from Geneva, who won the Illinois State Amateur this year. We have Caroline Smith from Inverness. We have Grace Curran, a past Illinois Am champ, this year's runner-up. So it's just And the local players are getting stronger, as is the Nationals players.
Well, I agree with you on the national, especially on the local side, which is very encouraging. I mean, we have, it's not just Nicole Jarre on the LPGA Tour anymore. There's Elizabeth Zocco, and the Illinois Women's Open champion of last year made a good showing last week, is making a good showing this week, Jeremy Boonchant. But I'm wondering what is the good message with your, especially the local players? Do you have any reason for you think the local players are getting better? Because it was a dry spell for a while there.
It definitely was, but there's quite a few girls from this area now that are playing college golf at Minnesota and Western Kentucky, Indiana, and the golf is just getting better. And so the local players are thinking, oh, great, I can play in a big national strong tournament and not have to travel.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm sure you're going to have another good tournament this week.
Absolutely. And there was an LPGA challenge here in 1992 where Dottie Pepper won, and it was played at 6,325, and that's what we're the same yardage we're playing for our amateur champion. And it's also interesting that the course record for an amateur woman is 71, so I'm certain this will be broken this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that the LPGA tournament back then because the newspaper that I worked for back then, the Chicago Sun-Times, was a more of a presenting sponsor, but they put our name on the title, and it was a tournament that had a 3-year run, the last two of which were at White Eagle, and they were good tournaments. They were exciting things back then, and I'm glad that. Big tournaments are back over at White Eagle. They had an Illinois Open that was successful there recently, and I'm sure yours is going to be every bit as good.
Absolutely, and the golf course is going to play extremely tough. Number 7 is the number 1 handicap, but the craziest one is the 6th green. If you just miss your putt by a few inches, you could end up putting off the green. In 1992, when the LPGA was here, Beth Daniels said to the media that she thought Arnold Palmer was buried in the middle of the green.
Susan, I remember that. I think Lenny and I were both in that little media briefer, and it got such an immediate reaction everywhere. And, of course, you know, back then social media isn't what it is today, but word got out about it. And as a matter of fact, a couple of days later, I think she felt bad. She actually called Arnold Palmer to apologize, and he thought it was funny. So she felt a little bit relieved and, you know, off the hook by that. But, Susan, for the players that are coming back that have played in the championship the last couple of years at Sunset Ridge or Park Ridge, they're going to see a little bit different style golf course, a lot more water and things instead of maybe the older traditional between the trees and just a lot of sand golf. Tell us how White Eagle's going to play out this week.
It is definitely going to be a shot maker's course. It's not just a grip it and rip it, you could say. You've got to be thinking through. You're going to use every club in the bag. It's also exciting that we have Marissa Winsler coming back. She won our championship in 21. So we have both 21 and 22 champion back in the field.
Well, that is always good news. And I know that Marissa is one of the long hitters in your event. Actually had the opportunity to golf with her at her home club, NCR, out in Dayton, Ohio, a couple years ago. And it's always nice to get up there and bomb one down the fairway and see a young lady come up and just blast it past you. She's very capable of doing. So I can only imagine the reaction that some of the other gals her age will do when they see that. I know members at both clubs the last couple of years, some of the men would come out to watch her hit shots because she can hit it pretty long, and so she's obviously a great addition to the field. Susan, give us the schedule for the week, how this great championship transforms from stroke play into match play, and the dates in which you'll be doing both.
Okay, well, on Sunday, tomorrow, we start with a co-am with the membership. So I think we have 60 girls playing in this co-am with members. So it actually gets them an extra practice round. Then we have a nice dinner, and then Monday is the official practice round. Tuesday and Wednesday, stroke play. Then we start the top 32 in match play. Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, we go to 16. Friday morning, 8. Friday afternoon, 4. And then the final Saturday morning.
Okay. And Susan, I know, you know, it's an amateur tournament, so there's not a huge winner's check at the end of the week. But last year you did have a special gift for the champion that came from a local club maker. Is that back again this year?
It certainly is. And this year, the finalist as well as the champion both get a Bettinardi putter. And we also have a partnership with Mizuno now, and this year's champion will get a total bag fitting from Mizuno.
Wow, that is some great additions there. And Susan, before we let you go this morning, I know that just a couple of weeks ago, the Women's Western Golf Association held its junior championship. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of great players there. A lot of them are first getting ready to gear up for their college career. I'm not sure if you were out there in St. Louis for that at Greenbrier Hills, but what can you tell us about the Women's Western Junior that was recently held last month?
Well, I was there in St. Louis at Greenbrier Hills, a wonderful golf course with a wonderful membership who were very supportive of our tournament. But that being said, like our amateur field is getting better, our junior field is too. We had top junior players from all over the world. Susie Tram won the tournament. She's also going to be in our amateur. We have an award that goes to, it's called the Marion Miley Award. And it goes to the person that played in both the junior and the amateur with the lowest stroke play score. And that's, so Jessica Mason won it last year, our junior champion. And we'll have to see. We've got quite a few that played in the junior that are also playing in the amateur.
Well, Susan, I think it'll be an exciting week at in Naperville out at White Eagle Golf Club. The golf course looks really good. They've had some recent work out there done on the golf course over the last couple of years by architect Todd Quitno of Quitno and Lohman Golf Design, and it's really added something to the golf course, and I'm sure all the players in your field will enjoy this week's championship. So I know the Women's Western Golf Association is looking forward to being there. And Susan, this week we're looking forward to seeing you and Susan Wagner in PR and all the other staff that comes out to your championships and watching some of these young ladies play some great golf.
Well, I think anyone in this area should come. It's free. You walk a beautiful golf course, and you will see the future LPGA stars when these women are unbelievably gifted golfers.
All right, Susan Buchanan, president of the Women's Western Golf Association. Susan, thanks so much for jumping in here with Len Zeem and myself this morning for a few minutes on Golfers on Golf Radio. And, again, we'll look forward to seeing you at a White Eagle Golf Club this week.
I look forward to seeing you, and thank you for having me.
No problem. Well, Lenny, I'll tell you what, it sounds like great golf happening this week, and we're going to see some very talented young women play out at White Eagle, and with water coming into play on 9 holes, there'll definitely be some risk-reward out on the golf course.
Yeah, that's a really a good tournament site for men and women. And, you know, it was funny after that that you brought up the LPGA event years back there. I mean, that was, I think, kind of maybe the first time that club brought itself out into the fore, and it was well received. I think it kind of, you know, maybe didn't have much in the way of tournament play, won't need it after that for a little while. But now I know that it's really come back. I mean, I thought it was great that it had was a good site for the Illinois Open, and I think it'll be every bit as good, if not a better, site for the Women's Western Amateur. It's one of Chicago's best private golf courses out there, private or public, and it's always good to to see the people over there. It's a very good location for a tournament. You're centrally located. And I hope people turn out in big numbers because this is an event that merits it.
Well, I know that, you know, management, it starts right there at the top with Curtis Malm, longtime Illinois PGA section professional who's won some majors in the Illinois PGA section. And I believe he's at the helm of the club now. And, you know, I talked to Curtis a little over a year ago, and they're getting ready to do some, you know, I believe it's close to $12 million worth of improvements around the golf club. On and off the golf course, both in the clubhouse and golf and pickleball and practice facilities and everything else, simulators in the club. They're trying to make the club more of a year-round facility, and I think they're going to do a great job in doing that. And, Len, I know you mentioned it a little bit ago, but when they had the Illinois Open out there, especially during COVID times, it was amazing how many people came out during those 3 days just to get out of the house at that point and watch some golf. And I think White Eagle did a very good job and a safe way to host the championship that year. And I believe it'll be the same way again this week. So, you know, it's one of the places where people can watch some tournament golf this week in the Chicago area.
Yeah, I tell you, enthusiasm counts for a lot. And that area, particularly at White Eagle itself, the White Eagle members there, they're among the most enthusiastic clubs out there. I mean, this is a great time to showcase their club. And their great way to do it is by bringing in such as good an amateur field as you could possibly get. So we'll be waiting to see what transpires out there.
Well, Lennon, the last couple of minutes here we've got before the break, you know, we mentioned tournaments on top of tournaments at this time of year, and I believe a little further downstate, we have the Illinois State Amateur, and I know you've covered that one plenty of times over the years.
Yeah, I have. I really like that tournament. It's one really that I've been trying to make it at least an appearance on the last two rounds, and I've gone to the event they had in Cocopelli and Marion 1 year. I like the fact that the Chicago District takes that tournament around. This time it's at Bloomington Country Club, and you know, there's a player. This is one of the best amateurs, Mac McClear of Hinsdale. Played at the University of Iowa, shared the Big Ten medal this year. He is, I believe, one of the very best amateurs to come out of Illinois in 10 years at least. He would certainly be the favorite. He's the defending champion, and I think this guy's got a great career in golf. He's played well at all levels. I mean, he was still in college when he won last year's state amateur. He beat out Illinois' Tommy Cool in that one, and he'll be the player to watch this week. But you know, I think that Mac has got thoughts of playing and will do well far beyond the level of amateur golf.
Well, he is back in the field, and I noticed some names out there that and we can go through some of them later in the program, but some of them are going to be very familiar to people who follow CDGA golf events and the state amateur championship. So anyway, with that, we are going to take our break here this morning, and in fine championship form, like that little tournament down in Georgia in April. We thank our sponsors for helping us keep this to 1 2-minute interruption per hour. And with that, we'll take our first break, and we'll be back with more with the hottest putting grip on the PGA Tour and more right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Mistwood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com. All right, it's 10:31. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears in studio, flying solo in the house today, playing as a single. But I got my partner out there long range. Got Len Zeem, who's actually up here in the Midwest from sunny and warm Florida these days. And Lenny, when you've been putting lately, how's the putting stroke going? Because if it's not working so well, we might have an answer to your problem.
Well, I bet you have. I've been going. I used to change putters. I bet you maybe 10 years ago, and before that, I used to change putters. It seemed like every month. But I settled on a Scotty Cameron that I don't know where I got it. I think it was an outing that Kemper put on as either a prize or as a welcome gift. And I've been happy with that. And I've been, you know, I always feel like, how would anybody ever want to trade in a Scotty Cameron? So because of the reputation it had, but you know, golf is a changing game, and I am fascinated. I have always been fascinated at the PGA Merchandise Show in January in Florida. The difference in the variety and the ingenuity of people who design putters, and so it's really a fun to study what's new on the market. So I'm looking forward to hearing what's coming up.
Well, Lenny, you know, we hear a lot about putters and the putter head design and different milling and all these other things, but what seems to be an in common thread for the winners, especially of PGA Tour golf events lately, including the U.S. Open, is that they've had one thing in common, and they're using the SuperStroke putter grips, and there's just one winner after another using those grips, and it really became apparent at the U.S. Open. And to tell us a little bit more about SuperStroke grips is Ian Zubkoff, the vice president of the company. Ian, welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Well, Ian, I'll tell you what, it's got... Go ahead.
I said, how you guys doing there? Is the weather good?
Yeah, weather is good today. I think a lot of people are going to be out playing some golf, and public facilities, especially ones with maybe 27 or 36 holes, can count on a day of maybe 600-700 golfers out. So it's probably one of the better weekends that we've had so far. So, but Ian, I'll tell you what, going back a few weekends to the U.S. Open, Wyndham Clark seems to have started a sensational run that I know was going on before the Open, but he really accelerated it when he won the U.S. Open with one of your Super Stroke putting grips. But then it didn't stop there. We saw the winner the following week. We saw Ricky Fowler. We saw Keegan Bradley. We saw all these people. And I think we saw 8 of the top 10 finishers at the U.S. Open using your putting grips, Super Stroke. And Ian, give us a little history on the company, how it came to be, and how your product has just exploded in professional golf.
Well, I mean, you know, it's we're very blessed. But, you know, I heard your lead-in, and I heard Len's lead-in, and I thought it was very interesting because what Len said about he used to switch putters all the time. If you think about it, 15 years ago, if you had a bad day putting, that's what you would have done. The putter would have ended up,
right.
You know, it would have ended up on the bench or in the garage or in the lake even, but you really didn't have a lot of options. You didn't really have a lot of options. And when Dean Dingman and I and a couple others started out in 2008 with this concept, the concept was basically to give people options. And, you know, now, for example, we have more than 40 different options of sizes, shapes, colors. I mean, the combinations are endless, and you can have those. So basically, Len, to your point, your same putter could have 40 different feels just by changing the grip.
Well, there's times I would want to change them that much too.
Well, and I think that's what we found. I mean, you know, we found a niche. You know, as you guys know, back in the day, I mean, if you went in, you know, there wasn't a lot of options. The options were in the putting corral. If you didn't like what you had, you easily just bought a new putter. Now you can change the complete feel, the size of the grip, the shape of the grip. You can change everything just by changing the grip itself. So you literally could have 40 different putters in the same putter if you so choose. So that was kind of the concept. The concept for us was we wanted to make golf more fun and easier to play, and we wanted to help golfers get better. And what club do you use more than a putter in a round? So if you could help that section of the game, then we felt like we were onto something.
Well, the whole concept of, and Ian, as you know, some years back, if you didn't like your putter, you bought a new one, and maybe it set you back 60, 80, 90 bucks. And now when you see price tags between $300 and $500 for a new putter, a lot of them right around the $400 range, people not as likely to rush out and do that. So if you kind of like what you have, but maybe it's just not quite working up to your expectations, the whole concept of same club, different feel can be done now with the addition or the changing. And I'm sure it's a lot cheaper just to add one of your new Super Stroke grips than actually going out and buying one of the new top brand putters off the rack, either in your pro shop or out at your golf retail store. Ian, tell us a little more about, you know, taking this product out to tour and getting players to believe in you, because it seems like your product has really caught fire out there, not just by the guys that are winning the tournaments, but more often than not, that the guys who are only a shot or two back of the guy that won.
Well, I think, you know, the credit for that is really kind of in our mission statement. And, you know, what we really tried to accomplish is, and I think unlike a lot of companies who build products, we won't name them, they build a product, be it a driver or a wedge or a set of irons or what have you, and then they go out and they try to fine-tune it, you know, to the player. We work directly with the tour players and get their feedback to build the products the way they want them. So I think you see a lot of acceptance because they have a lot of feedback. in how those products come to market. And, you know, they're on tour long before they come to market. And that's, I think, a secret to our success. We've really got a great team led by our CEO, Dean Dingman, who is, like, ever paying attention to the needs of the tour, the wishes of the tour players, the dimensions, the little iotas of things that these guys and girls would like to see changed. And we make those changes. And, you know, the public doesn't always see those changes because a lot of that stuff stays on tour because it's so minuscule. But, for example, you were talking about Wyndham Clark and Ricky. Though that grip that you saw them win with, which is the 17-inch Tour 3.0, that was a tour-only grip until those two guys did what they did with it. And then the demand, because there just wasn't that much demand for it in the real world. And after what those guys did, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in a row, besides just the U.S. Open with Ricky winning last week, you know, it's now a product that we said, okay, the public deserves to be able to get it. We're getting enough requests for it.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect example of a grip that was designed for the tour that now has made it, you know, into our regular line.
Yeah, I've got to ask you, I believe I saw online that there's so much demand for this particular grip that you ran out and you're trying to get more in, and it's going to be, any day now, I think, that you'll finally have more in supply so that people can actually order them again.
Well, we sold out like on Saturday of the U.S. Open. I mean, the crazy, you know, just success of it, and the demand went through the roof. And of course, we've worked feverishly to get it back in stock. I believe we're in stock already, and you know, we have pretty good relationships with our supply chain, so we're able to have product. And I think you're going to see that product kind of at retail here in the next week or so. So we're really excited about the acceptance of it.
Ian, I got to ask you the reaction. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had on Story Snyder, the PR guy from the Bettinardi Putters, and he said the company owner, Bob Bettinardi, about jumped off his patio into the pool when he saw one of their players, you know, win the U.S. Open a year ago. What was the reaction for you and the rest of the ownership group when you saw Wyndham Clark pull off winning the U.S. Open championship there on Sunday? And I know that a lot of times as we watched him line up those winning strokes down the stretch at L.A. Country Club, you had to be everybody had to be excited seeing him getting it done with your product.
Well, obviously to say that you wouldn't be excited would be an understatement. I mean, we're fairly blessed. Bob Bettinardi is just a great guy. They make great product. We're really blessed with, you know, I don't know how many majors we won and how many tournaments, but you know, it's just, and you know, I'm a golf geek, probably like you guys. I mean, I watch every stroke of every tournament that's on TV, and you know, to watch it that way, happening the way that it was broadcast, was just flabbergast. I mean, we were ecstatic would be an understatement. Like, just, you know, for not only for obviously that much exposure, but watching a guy like Wyndham Clark achieve his dream, you know, was kind of touching. And, you know, Wyndham actually lives out in the same area where I do and plays out at a club that I play at, and you know, he's well liked, and he's very well liked around the Scottsdale area. And you know, I'm not saying we're buddies or anything, but I sure have I know a lot of people who know him, and there was more people cheering for him on, you know, just because of how good a guy he is and his story than probably people realize, like tour players and caddies, and he's just well-liked. And it was, you know, to have him and Ricky and Rory, you know, all going down the stretch, I mean, it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, is it through him being at your club, or is there a story behind getting your product, hooked up with him and letting him take it out to tour? Because the understanding that I have is that he switched to your grip shortly before he won earlier this year at Wells Fargo in Charlotte. So since he's put the Superstroke grip on his putter, he doesn't just have one win, he's got two wins.
Yeah, no, the story is so, and I'm hoping that I get it accurate for you, but I'm pretty sure I'm pretty close. Ricky got that grip originally, and that putter was built for another tour player, and his caddy, Ricky Romano, ended up with it, and Ricky ended up putting it in play. Now, as you know, Ricky played at Oklahoma State, and, you know, was a proper alum there, and, you know, obviously hung out with some of the players and stuff, and Wyndham played at Oklahoma State also. So the story I heard, Ricky and Wyndham were playing down at Ricky's club, I think not too long ago, you know, during the off season. Ricky was putting with this putter. Wyndham tried it and asked Ricky if he could get him one built just like his. And that's literally. And so for those two guys to tie together on that putter and then end up in the final group together, how crazy is that?
Yeah, that is wild. Ian, I gotta ask you. It's amazing. I look at some of my old Scotty Camerons that are sitting in the corner of my office, and you look at the original Cameron grips, and they're realistically almost paper thin. And all of a sudden, the size of putter grips, the thickness, just has kept emerging over the years. And when did people really start to realize that those old thin grips that we saw years ago could be improved by just making them a little bigger and a little thicker, and maybe if somebody wanted to squeeze the grip a little tighter, that there was some extra padding on there, so to speak, where they could do that?
Well, I mean, I think it's just everything evolves, you know, just like you're seeing the technology. I think, you know, science comes into play, and you learn the, you know, there's different things out there, like, you know, the sand putting lab. There's different science data points where you can learn that squeezing down on the putter is more likely to make you pull a putt, and when you find the proper size that fits in your hand correctly, you'll find a better stroke. You'll find a more consistent stroke. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody doesn't putt great with, like you're saying, an extremely thin grip. That's just to say that we found lots of people putt better with a little bit larger grips. And that's why we make them all the way from the extremely thin to the extremely, you know, big. I don't think a lot of times people don't realize we make even the smallest size grips, but we're obviously known for kind of expanding the horizons on larger size grips. And, you know, that's kind of where it comes from. It kind of comes from science, but if you get on one of those putting labs, you'll find that as you get slightly bigger, 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 the putts tend to want to go further a little bit more to the right. So the bigger you go, a little bit more right, your aim will go. So it kind of stops pulling putts when you find the right size. You get a truer stroke.
Well, very interesting. I'll have to keep that in mind the next time I'm out on the greens. Len Ziem, how about you? What do you have here for Ian Zubkoff?
Well, yeah, kind of the obvious question to me is it's hard. First of all, it'd be hard to find the right set of irons, the right driver for you, the right you know, all the right ball. You know, it's hard enough for me right there, but the how do you start determining what the right grip is for you? Is there a formula for how, what you should do? Say you're a frustrated player. Where do you begin? Where do you begin? And you want to pinpoint with the grip. The grip might be a good way to start. Start with the grip. It'd be less expensive to find a good grip than a new iron, putter, or going on down the line. Is there a formula for determining what the right grip is for you?
Well, I think you know, the basic formula, Len, to answer your question, there really is no perfect formula, but there are formulas. Okay,
that's
so if you're pulling a lot of putts, or you're having trouble keeping your putter online, a little bigger is better for sure, because it lets your hands relax more. Right, you're not squeezing down and so forth and so on. But I think the great thing about it is, like you're saying, it's way easier to go feel 20 different grips in your hand rather than having to go, you know, obviously, even if you make a mistake, you know, it's a $30 mistake versus an $1,100 mistake if you bought the wrong set of irons, right?
Right, absolutely.
Wow.
So, you know,
that's helpful. That's a really good way to look at it.
Right, but I mean, you know, if you go to any retail store, I mean, all those grips are there, you know, on shafted samples, or you can pick the grips up and feel them. I mean, you can get a real good feel of how a grip feels in your hand just by holding it, you know, and then obviously, you know, they can slide it on your club and you take it out for a whirl once you find it. And, you know, in the putting corral there, I'm sure there's lots of putters with different super strokes on where you could get a feel of which grip size you like. You know, there's lots of ways to determine that. But, you know, I think that's something that's really about personal feel. What feels good to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ian, finally, before we let you go today and let you go enjoy your weekend, how many different models, styles, lengths do you offer? And I'm assuming that the grips aren't just for the guys, that you've got them in proper lengths and feel for the ladies as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm just going out on a limb here. We've got more than 40 different shapes and sizes. 40.
And they come in a variety of colors and I believe some different themes as well.
Yeah, we've got colors for everyone. I mean, you know, and that's one of the cool things. I mean, you know, some people like, you know, like we have a limited edition grip coming out very, very soon. You know, it's going to be a Ryder Cup grip that you're going to be able to go to our website and get. You know, we offer, you know, people should go to our website and look at the products along with our biggest and best retailers. But, you know, we offer some one-off kind of collector stuff on our website, you know, which is superstrokeusa.com. And you just can find some unique things that you won't be able to get anywhere else from time to time.
Well, Ian Zubkoff, Vice President of Superstroke Putting Grips, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Congratulations on all the recent success that the players using your product seem to be having in the world of professional golf. And hopefully we'll get them on the putting shafts of more and more amateur players. And maybe all the amateurs will be able to get their handicap down a couple of shots by using Superstroke. Ian, thanks for jumping in this morning, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time, and I'm happy to be here for you.
All right. All right, it is 10:53. Time flies when you're having fun, and we're down here. I think we've hit the 18th hole already, Len Zeem. And Lenny, any thoughts on what's coming up golf-wise, and anything else potentially on your Zeem Machine World Travel Tour here around the Midwest?
Well, you know, I tell you, we touch on this every now and then, but This last week after the John Deere Classic, it was an easy stop to go over to Eagle Ridge in Galena, which is, you know, that's Illinois's really only really full-fledged golf resort. Of course, it's 63 holes and all. But I am just amazed at all the things that Mark Klausner has done in the 4 years since he's owned the place. I think that a lot of people would be very surprised if they haven't been there for a while to go over and check out Eagle Ridge. We only played the North Course, but you could tell by looking that the conditioning is much better now that they've entered into an agreement with John Deere to change their maintenance equipment. The new spa is absolute. I'm not a spa guy, but we got a real tour of the finished product now. It's terrific. He's rearranged the resort. He's the nines have been flipped on the general, and of course now we've got a new chef came in last week, and that comes on the heels of John Schlaman returning as the director of golf over the whole resort after the retirement of Mike Weiler. So in a lot of ways, Eagle Ridge now is a whole new place than it had been, and that was pretty darn good before in my book. But it's a place that is really taken on some exciting new projects.
Well, Mark Klausner, as I think, has made a lot of the right moves, and also just things. It's amazing the investment he's put into the property, stuff that even visitors don't see, because there's been infrastructure work just in heating and air conditioning in the main clubhouse, moving some things around, making the food preparation areas a little bit better. Then again, the pro shops, not only up at the general clubhouse, but the north, south, and east, they've had to redo the siding there because they had a lot of holes in them from woodpeckers and different varmints running around up there biting into things. And now with the woodpecker proof siding on the spa as well, I gotta believe that the buildings are going to stay in better shape. They're going to look better. And I know the main inn is going to have some work done to it here in the next year or two, and maybe starting with outside and then moving inside on all of their rooms, which have been pretty good, but I guess are about to get better. So, Len, do we have a spa report? Did you go visit the spa, or did the executive producer and photographer of Len Zeme on Golf, Joy Sarver, get over to visit the spa?
Well, you know, we it was an odd day. We got there on the Monday after the John Deere, and took our tour with marketing director Colin Sanderson right away. We went right off and had a look at it, and it was closed. It was a great day to have the place closed because we didn't have any. We couldn't use it, but I would rather kind of play golf the next day anyway, but. It was really good that we could go around it just with Colin and ourselves, because you could sit there and think about what all went into it rather than go through it where people were using it be a little bit of a distraction for them and for us doing our job, I thought. But so it worked out. It worked out very well that we went through the new spa, with somewhat of a private tour. It was a good thing. One of these days, I'm going to want to try out something over there. And I know Joy does already, probably.
Well, the golfer's massage, always something good to try out if you're at any of the destination properties that offer such a experience. Well, Lenny, thanks for jumping in this morning. We look to be back to Chicago's favorite foursome again next weekend. And special thanks to our producer, Brian, for getting us out to you. Also for Susan Buchanan, president of the Women's Western Golf Association, this week's 123rd Championship taking place starting Tuesday at White Eagle Golf Club in Naperville. We also have the Illinois State Amateur down in Bloomington as well. So some good tournament golf, and we hope that you'll have an opportunity to get out and enjoy your favorite golf course. And pretty soon we'll start having some more stuff on travel destinations. I know people are getting to that time of year. They like to go visit some other golf courses. So for Len Zeem and myself, thanks for listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spear Sports Communications Limited and guests.